Blog Talk Radio.
Let's start the show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to a new episode of AST Presents here, hosted by Arden. Appreciate you once again for listening. I really, really do. Thank you to everybody that listened to the first two episodes of AST Presents featuring Benjamin Albright and Leonard Fairley. Both episodes were very good, and I had a lot of fun doing them. And, again, I really appreciate you guys just listening, man. Of course, as always, man, please follow me on Twitter. Spread the word at Arden Sports Talk. Everything is in the description below, including my Tumblr, which I'm always uploading new stuff on, and my SoundCloud. Speaking of SoundCloud, new episode of the Snatchback Podcast is coming to you guys tomorrow. I'm recording it tomorrow morning. That's right. Got to do what I got to do. So just be on the lookout for that. You know, I was thinking about recording it right after Game 3 happened, but I was like, you know what? Let me hold off. Let me wait till Game 4 because it just makes more sense doing it that way. So when it's time to, you know, really see what's going on, I could go ahead and discuss it. Plus, I feel like it's much better for the show anyway, you know. It would have been sad for me to record after Game 3, all hyped and excited about the Cavs leading 2-1. Then on Friday morning, I wake up in a completely different mood. But, you know, I didn't have a problem doing that last week. With, you know, when the Cavaliers lost Game 1 and Kyrie's injury and the uncertainty around it at that time. But, you know, we back. We out here. You know, we up 2 months feeling good. And hopefully on Friday, when I do the podcast, you know, the Cavs are up 3-1. But, yeah, man, this is AST Presents. We're waiting for our guest to call in right now. You know, got a very special guest in here, man. Very good people. You know, him and his brothers, man, they do a great job running their league. And they actually, they just popped up right now on my screen. You know, just to get you a quick introduction to them, these two brothers, man, they're very responsible for running an awesome basketball league located on Orchard Beach in the Bronx, New York, called Hoops in the Sun. They've been around for about 15 years or so at the very least, at the very most. Very good basketball league, and these dudes are very good people, man. One half of the Cruz Brothers duo is here. And it's actually good talking to you, my dude, because I really get to talk to you, man. Joe Cruz from Hoops in the Sun Basketball. How's everything, man?
I'm good, my brother. How are you? It's a pleasure to be on your show. I thank you for the great intro. That was awesome.
No problem, man. Thank you for coming on, man. And I'm excited to talk to you, man, because I really get to talk to you, man. But, you know, thanks. I always see what you guys are doing, and you guys are always doing really good work.
Well, thank you, man. I mean, likewise, I know you and my brother, you know, close on the Blog Talk Radio tip, and I really do, you know, I'll commend on what you do on the radio show. But it's a pleasure to be on the show. I know I'm always incognito, but, you know, as you know, around this time of the year, I'm running around doing a thousand things, getting ready for this league or maintaining the league,
man,
to make sure it's at its highest quality. And, and plus balance a full-time job, so you know how that goes.
All right, no problem, man. No problem at all, man. Just happy to have you here. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to follow Joe and or know more about Hoops in the Sun Basketball League, please follow them on Twitter, at Hoops in the Sun. Also follow Randy, at Randy J. Cruz. You won't regret it. And let's go ahead and get into this interview, man, of course, because, you know, the main thing with AST Presents, it's all about really trying to know more about people on a deeper level instead of just the obvious questions and stuff. But this is a serious question to me because I really want to know, man. You and your brother, you know, you guys have been in the basketball for such a long time and it's now have ended up into this with this league. How did you get into basketball, you know? And did you play organized ball, like AAU, or were you just playing on the playground?
Well, I've been into basketball ever since about 11 years old, and my father used to play back in his day basketball as well as run track and in various amount of sports. But the one sport that stuck to me was basketball, just from the teamwork aspect, just from learning different things that can translate into, you know, real life. And it kind of grew on me, you know, making sure that I'm able to be a leader, be responsible, work with teammates and from different backgrounds and cultures, and kind of develop my own niche in basketball as I grew up. To answer your second part of the question, I did play organized ball. I was fortunate enough to play high school basketball. I wasn't the greatest, but I played, I played my freshman year. I played JV, and I played Varsity B at LaSalle Academy, where names of Sham Gartwells and Ed Olisma and those kind of people, Ron Artest, came out of. Wasn't on their level, but I was able to see them, do their thing and kind of, take the sport to a different level. And AAU wasn't as vibrant as it is now, so I wasn't in the AAU, kind of circuit. Pretty much it was, structured, organized basketball with, a little mix of a playground kind of feel to get, just to get my grind and get my heart and get, that grit that's needed in the game of basketball. So that's pretty much my story. And then I ended up at continuing my basketball career and going to TCI, which is Authentic Career Institute, played 2 years there. Then I said, I think I'm pretty good to play at least Division III. Then I went to Lehman College to play, finish off my career playing at Lehman in the Bronx. Then I had a few opportunities to go play in Puerto Rico on the junior national level. I made a couple of teams, but I unfortunately tore my ACL, and I was able to come back to the States and just, work with my dad and my brother on this Hoops in the Sun venture.
Wow, man, that's a heck of a career, man. And that's just being real. Like, that's one heck of a career. But for real, I didn't think it was going to be that extensive. But, you brought up playground basketball. You brought up playground basketball, man. And for me personally, that's how I got into the game. Playing basically street ball, playing in the park. Like, I still remember my first park that I played at in Yonkers, Martin Luther King Park. Played that every day with my dad. And, this basically leads to my next question, and also Lincoln Park, shout out to Lincoln Park and your show. Playground basketball has always been at the forefront. At times, it's been like the number one thing we think about basketball. In today's times, where basically a lot of people, when it comes to playing ball, they love playing in the gyms, and of course you got the evolution of AAU, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Do you still feel as if playground basketball still has a strong impact in today's game? With what it can do in terms of, player development and everything else.
Well, I think in any inner city, state, or city, playground basketball is vital. As some of our young men and women come through hard times in basketball, and playground basketball is needed for them to really venture off and venture off on something that they want to, kind of build upon. But I do think playground basketball is still strong. I feel over the past, my brother and I have been doing this for 16 years. So I can say that we're veterans, but we've seen it better back in the day, where every matchup and every park had a highlight moment or a highlight rivalry or a highlight team that had that playground essence. Nowadays you still have a sprinkle of that, but I think the playground basketball is now building from the bottom up, and I mean that in all respect, and that's with our youth that's able to come up in the ranks. A lot of our middle school, our biddies, and our high school kids are really developing at a young age, which is, kind of trickling into our playground basketball, which is helping us out and trying to find the talent. We, develop them at an early age so we can have, playground basketball continue. Some of the older veterans have transitioned out and started their own AAU program or coaching or even their own teams, since they can't play on the blacktop anymore because it's a big, grind. But I think that it's still alive, and I wish it could be a little better, honestly. But as long as we continue, as long as we're able to have our youth kind of, exposed to the hollow ground and what it's about and where it came from and have that history with them and then kind of taper it off to their own kind of expertise, I think we'll be fine.
Absolutely, and I agree with you there because, like I told you before I asked the question, man, for me, playground basketball, if it wasn't for playground basketball, I don't think I would be in the basketball period because that was my first experience. When I was younger, I had experience playing in the gym, the local YMCA, but for me, it was playing in the park, playing in that concrete and playing in that type of environment. And I feel as if even though everything's about the gyms now and it's a lot about logistics and other reasons people maybe don't play a lot of flame around basketball, but I really feel as if, man, if it continues to make its comeback, it will benefit anybody from any background, because certain lessons that I've learned from playing basketball in the park have carried with me to right now, just in terms of toughness. Again, that teamwork,
right.
Just embracing the different type of environments that you play in when you go to different parks and you play in different neighborhoods and you play in, you know, when I was 10 years old, having to play against 14, 15-year-olds, and now they wasn't taking it easy on me regardless of how, you know, young I was. So I really hope
right.
it continues. And, you know, and another thing I want to ask you is, and this is something that I always wanted to know, which is, of course, when you think about basketball in New York City, you think about the leagues. And there's so many leagues and so many different parks. And this is something that I always wanted to know, and I was happy that I came up with a question, which is there a rivalry among the different basketball leagues in New York City, or is it like a united front, like everybody knows, like, their purpose?
Well, I mean, I can say for me and my brother, and I'll speak for a unit of people that I come across, and I can't speak for everybody. I think there is a rivalry between different leagues, and I mean that respectfully, because everybody's competitive and everybody wants to be the best. And I think that's the drive that each league has. You know, everybody has a special niche in their tournament, has a special location that they want to cater to, a special set of fans. So, yeah, there is a rivalry, you know. I mean, people want to, you know, leagues want to be the best. So, you know, you want to get the best players to play at your league. You want to get the best exposure. You want to get the best pros. Yeah, I mean, I consider that a friendly competition, and I think that's good for NYC basketball to have leagues have that kind of fire and drive to be the best, you know. As far as the rivalry where it's negative, I don't see that. I just think it's just for the benefit of the game and benefit for the league. So as far as United Front, I think our overall mission and goals as summer leagues and tournaments, some people say, is that we are united because we want to provide quality basketball to New York City. We want to be, you know, we want to be hollow ground. We want to be the stomping ground where basketball starts and ends at. And I think that's the united front that each league has. I think we all have the same agenda, serving the same population, serving the same athletic scholars, student athletes, you know, our professional athletes. We're all united on that, you know, to provide safe and high quality programming within whatever neighborhood we service. And I think that's the approach that we've all taken on that topic.
And it's the right approach, because even though there is a rivalry, like you said, it's more like amongst certain leagues, it's really just friendly. It's friendly competition, man. Everybody just wants to be the best. Everybody wants to try to get the best talent and set up the
right
environment for everybody, you know. And I think, again,
right.
that's very important, because, you know, this is going to go into my next question, which is when you think about the evolution of AAU, social media, and also these prep schools now that are located in, you know, let's keep it like nearby, like Connecticut or New Jersey or Massachusetts or Maine,
right.
it's really taking effect on, like, or at least from what I saw, maybe you could inform me on this more, on, like, the New York City public schools. So I remember growing up 10, 15 years ago, and even doing my research beforehand, New York City public schools develop a lot of talent. Like, I say a lot about Lincoln High School or Rice High School and so many of these different schools and people playing at these schools, and then, of course, in the league, to where now
right.
I hear a lot about players playing in leagues, but all of a sudden the same kid that plays in, let's say, your league, he's from the Bronx, but he's playing in a prep school out there in Jersey, just from the standpoint
right.
of trying to get a better education and a better opportunity to play ball. So basically what the question is, what are you thinking when you're seeing the evolution of AAU basketball, and especially the impact that social media has on the game when it comes to the exposure of these young kids?
Well, I mean, there's positive and negatives in everything. I am not too, I would say, versed in the whole AAU concept or the whole AAU programming. I do think that it's a positive where you can, you know, hand select or pretty much have youth and kids come to your program to have a better opportunity to play basketball on a local or national level throughout the year. I think that's a positive. You know, do I know the organization that, you know, what they represent, and are they really true to the game? Are they true to the, you know, to the student athlete? I want to say yes, but there's times that I've heard that it's no, you know, that these programs, you know, use these youth for certain things and just for their talent, not for their personal growth, not for their mental growth. So, I mean, there's always going to be positive and negative, and I really can't speak upon that too in depth because I'm not in an AAU kind of format or exposed to it on an everyday basis. But I do know that it has blown up over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years, where everything is, you know, everything is based on AAU status, AAU program, which team you're rocking with, which state you're from, you know, whether it's Players Club, whether it's Scout Show, whether it's Riverside, whatever it is. I mean, it's about clout. It's about recognition right now. You know what I'm saying? Back in the day when we used to play, there was no social media. There was no, you know, there was true ranking, you know, from the New York Post and the news. When you do your thing on the court, that translates to, you know, to newspaper articles. And now it's all about, like you said earlier, social media, Instagram, you know, Under Armour coming in and, you know, doing their thing and, you know, other, you know, other brands that are kind of, you know, taking this AAU situation to a whole new level. I think that's good for the game, but I don't know whether it kind of harnesses that essence that playground basketball or New York City basketball was really built upon.
And earlier when we talked about, again, so I just want to go back just real quickly to just talking about the leagues in New York City and competition. I think the biggest thing I think it comes down to is establishing an identity when it comes to your brand. And basically, do you believe, like, Hoops in the Sun has established its own identity despite the amount of competition, regardless of how big or small it is, in New York City, to where regardless of what's going on, you're confident because you know, hey, this is what we do. We have an identity, unlike some out there, if there's any out there that don't have one.
Well, I mean, you know, we focus on identity. We focus on being unique. We focus on our venue and what our mission and vision is. And, you know, for us, my brother and I speak for him, is, you know, just providing, you know, the best basketball experience. You know, like, we're not in the playground. We're not a neighborhood. I wish we were at times. But, you know, when you go to the beach and you experience that experience, I would say, you see the scenery. You see the true fans. You see fans that don't know basketball. And you see fans that are, you know, rabid fans for basketball. And, you know, we try to, you know, reinvent ourselves every year to figure out what is it we're going to do to really impact this neighborhood, impact the community, be a staple in the Bronx. And I think my brother and I have done that, Emily, and we will continue doing it because we love what we do. You know, my dad was, you know, alive, you know, his thing was always making sure that we take this program, we build upon it, become young entrepreneurs, which we are, and become a staple in the community that is positive, that kids can come back and say, I started here, and this is where I'm at now. Or I worked here, and this is where we're at now. And us being, Randy and I being our age, being young, in retrospect, It's great because we're still around and really see those stories and see those experiences really develop. And, you know, I'm a little biased. I love Hoops in the Sun because it's what it brings and what it breeds. And it breeds, you know, top-notch, hard-nosed basketball that's played at its core, at its, you know, essence. And that's what New York City basketball is about. You know, blacktop basketball, grind, you know, hot sun, can't avoid it, too hot. And you got to fight. And, you know, when you come out that game, you come out that experience, it makes you stronger, it makes you better. So that's the part I like about, what I love about Hits and what I love about being fortunate enough to really represent this program the way it is now.
For the near future, or just the future in general, is there any future plans for Hoops in the Sun?
Yes, we want to. Actually, I don't know if my brother is listening or hearing this, but we haven't really discussed it, but over the past few weeks and over the past, I would say, month, I want to take this program to make it all year round and hopefully provide basketball, you know, fall, spring, winter, summer. I think that when we provide this kind of quality programming for summertime, it's a two-month experience. And I think that our program has now really blossomed into a point where we can make this an all-year-round program where we can stay with that kid or that adult throughout the duration of their process and help them develop and help them get an opportunity to be exposed or get an offer somewhere or get a scholarship. And I think that our program has to really look at developing our core and building upon it. Like, I know recently we just came off our successful spring league, you know, and the void is there. You know, people say, when are you going to come back? Or when are you going to start up? Are you going to have a fall league and a winter league? And, you know, and also, you know, looking at that, that's one. Two is doing camps and fundamental camps for kids in our neighborhoods so we can give back on that level. And also making this, you know, trying to see if the summertime can be the pinnacle of bringing NBA talent and bringing the top talent out to the beach where, you know, not only myself, who is, an avid fan, but like yourself and people who are in the industry can really see these players up front for free. It's kind of hard for kids and parents to really afford to go see these type of games at an arena. You know, take, for example, the Cavs and the Warriors. You can't get a ticket, you know, to see LeBron or to see somebody that they see on TV for free play at our, you know, venue. It's, you know, that's the future plan for Hoops is using
that. That's a great plan.
And building upon, you know, doing an all-year-round program and building upon some instructional camps and doing some, you know, some clinics all year round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and to piggyback off what you said too about all year round, I feel like one thing too, if you guys ever looked into it, which I think will be dope just from the standpoint, if you ever wanted to like look in a little more in AAU, is like tournaments, you know, Hoops in the Sun tournaments, you know, things like that. That would also help out too if you guys ever wanted to do that. But I'm happy you really got into it as much with the future plans because not just me, but the listeners, we really want to know, man, how much goes into preparing a basketball league like this? Like, you're talking about a two-month season for you guys right now. I know you got the spring league, but I already know the planning for it is not 2 months long. Like, so please tell me just the planning that it takes to make sure that everything goes right.
Well, this question is probably the best question you asked me, and I'm going to answer it in a very detailed outline. If you guys listening think that the tournament of this magnitude or any tournament in the city, you know, that do the same thing that we do, that is overnight, you guys got it wrong. This is a long 6 to 8 month process. It's about once we digress from the summer league, we sit back, of course, take our vacation and think about, damn, what else did we do wrong? I mean, what did we do wrong? What else can we do right? What else can we add? What sponsors do we need? What partnerships we got to go with? And what do we want to really add next year? And all those thoughts kind of get filtered into a plan where we figure out those questions, right? So we do proposals, we do sponsorship decks, and we try to identify the best sponsors that we haven't got or we maybe missed out the year prior that we want to really identify to help us grow this brand. And I think that's the first part, is identifying the right partner to be with and the right sponsors. And once we get those people on deck, God willing, you know, they have their own idea how they want their brand represented alongside us, and then we kind of work together on that. And then during October, November, those things go out, you know, proposals, sponsorships, inquiries, meetings, you know, kind of selling yourself where, you know, hey, listen, you want to sponsor us because this, that, and the fourth, right? And this is how we can help you and this, that, and the fourth. And then we, you know, we go into our recap meetings with sponsors that we had that current year to let them know that what we did, net data, numbers, you know, pictures, videos, just showing them that the money they've given us and the things that they support us on are really happening, and this is the fruit of the labor. And then after that, in January, we go hard, you know, with getting teams and doing schedules and, you know, finding out how we're going to do this and do that. And then all the way until April, we get right into it with our spring league and trying to get that built up. And then while the spring is still going on, we're still, you know, signing off deals and signing off sponsorships and signing off donations and getting money together to get bleachers and to get insurance and to get permits and to get equipment for the program and to get staff acclimated and all this nonsense that can keep going on and on. But that's how it goes with a two-month process. It's really a 6 to 8 month process to get a high-quality tournament to a, you know, where you want to be at. And for us, we take pride in putting out the best quality, so it takes a lot of time. So it's all year-round type project.
I'm just tired listening to that process. I mean, that's a lot of work.
I tell you, man, I'm tired of thinking it right now because I'm getting ready for the weekend and I got a bunch of things to worry about. So, you know, I don't want to take too much show, but yeah, it's a lot of work, man. It's a lot of work, but if you do something that you love to do, if you love what you do, then it becomes easier. Like you do this, you do a great job on radio. So what you do, you prep for it, want the best guests, want the best questions, want the best answers. Takes time, you know, and you build upon that, and that's your foundation, and, you know, then after that, it's easy picking from that.
Exactly, man, and it really gets easy just doing something that you love, especially when you're ready to do it. I got one more question for you, man.
Sure.
When it's all said and done, you guys are at a remarkable point, 15 years in doing this, building off what your father started and his legacy. What do you want Hoops and his son legacy to be?
I want the Hoops and the Sun legacy to be the best professional ran program and tournament ever to hit NYC landscape. And when it's all said and done, I want to be, because I want my brother and I to be considered New York City legends that really paved the way for somebody else to do what we do and even better. Not only from the kids and from the players that played, but also the next Joe Cruz, the next Rainey Cruz that wants to build a tournament and do it in their neighborhood. We want to be that that example for that next person to run a tournament the way we did do it. And as all said and done, I want us to be considered legends and one of the best that ever did it.
Joe Cruz, ladies and gentlemen, for Hoops and his son, one half of the Cruz Brothers duo. Really good people, man. If you happen to be in New York City, anywhere, man, if you want to see some basketball, please go by Orchard Beach in the Bronx. Check out their league, man. I'm really trying to get down there, man, if my schedule clears up. But even if I don't, man, I'm going to get you guys off the show, and I want some gear. Shirts, socks, whatever, because I want to represent. I want to promote you guys because you guys are very good people.
Right.
And I really mean that with all my heart, man. Follow Joe at Hoops and his Son on Twitter. Follow Randy on Twitter at Randy J. Cruz. And I really mean that, man. Joe, thank you once again for coming on the show. I really appreciate
it. Arden, it's a pleasure to be on the show, man. You do it. You do it a great job, and you're a class act. So anybody listening, man, please continue to support Arden and what he does and the way that you do it is a class act. So if anybody needs more information on the tournament, and this is the same thing for you, our website is up and running. It's www.hoopsandthesun.net. It gives you the schedules. It gives you the recaps. We also have a radio show that's connected to our program. So I know we'll be definitely staying connected on that end. But if anybody wants to really get information on it, that's where they need to go as well.
All right, man, no problem. Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thanks, boss, man. God bless you and the best to you moving forward.
All right, man, no problem. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
All right. That was the interview, ladies and gentlemen, with Joe Cruz from Hoops and his Son. Another great interview, man. AST Presents, we're on a roll. Thank you for listening. Remember, new episode of the Snatchback Podcast coming out on Friday, recording it Friday morning, dropping it. This interview coming out Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Remember to stay focused, stay blessed, and do what you got to do, man. I'll talk to you guys next time.